And welcome in to the Monday edition, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Monday morning. Hope everybody had a fantastic holiday weekend. We're back at it here on the program today. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Rex Road, good morning. How was your 4th of July weekend?
Pretty good. You know, the best part was an incredible comeback from my Detroit Tigers yesterday to complete a sweep over the Cleveland Guardians and Cleveland and establish a continued best record in Major League Baseball.
Are so, you there? You fully believing that this team is – this is it? This is a World Series winner this year?
Well, I don't know. It's been 41 years. There's been one in my lifetime. So, but, you know, it's getting to the point where my brother and I are texting daily during games. So that's pretty serious in, like, early July. So,
yep.
You know, I mean, look, I'm a Fairweather fan. I don't know how many, you know, a lot of people are. I don't judge Fairweather fans because, frankly, when the Tigers were cheeks for a long time, I barely paid attention and I kind of even faded away from baseball in general. And now that they're good, I'm obsessed again. So, sorry. That's just how it goes. But I got a feeling that this team is special and has a chance.
57-34, the record for those Detroit Tigers right now. 57-34. It's pretty darn good. Pretty darn good.
With a lot of really good.
Pretty good.
That's fitting because I watched a bunch of like old Curb episodes this weekend, which is for no reason. But, yeah, I mean, you're talking about a young team with one of the best farm systems, too. So, like, it's kind of exciting, man. It's kind of exciting.
It's coming up roses for you.
Yeah, we'll see.
Ian Safar, how we doing? How was your 4th of July weekend?
Oh, doing great. Thanks. It was good. It was a nice, relaxing Friday. Hung out at the in-laws on the Cumberland.
Sweet.
It was fun. And it was nice to wake up on Saturday and be like, oh, it's Saturday, not Sunday.
Yes.
So it was a good 3-day weekend. Hope everybody was safe and had a good time.
Yeah, for sure. That did get confusing.
Yeah.
The Friday, July 4th, I woke up Saturday and I was like, huh, guess I'm going to be late for church. It's like 8:30.
Saturday felt like Sunday for sure.
Good stuff there. I will say only, you know, I was looking around my neighborhood on, I guess that would have been Thursday night. And I was like, huh. Nobody's shooting anything. Like, there's no fireworks going off. Nothing's going on. Like, about 6:30 on July 4th, still nobody was doing anything. And then at about 8:45 collectively on July 4th, my entire neighborhood shot off fireworks. I mean, all at the same time. It was going on all around me. And I was like, okay. So they actually did purchase fireworks this year. They just held on to them until Friday night.
Yeah.
But it's been well-behaved in my neighborhood for the most part. Friday night, they went nuts and – other than that, it's been pretty tame.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it wasn't bad last night. A few went off, and I was like, okay. I mean, I was like, seriously, I'm gonna drive around, see who's doing this. But they stopped, so it wasn't too bad. Just went a little. You know, you're still like, okay, so we're around 11 o'clock. I understand it's Saturday, but we're around 11 o'clock. There are kids and dogs all through this neighborhood, and you need to fire these off this late, dude. Really? At this time, you don't, you know, again, it's just the kids, little kids.
Yeah.
That's a little bit annoying, but it's been worse.
I will say, they behaved. I mean, Friday night, it was about 12:45 in the morning. They were still going. I was like, wow, we're really got a deep supply this year, baby. Good stuff.
Yeah. But, you know, it's like you remember being, I also remember being young and not even thinking about stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
And not giving a crap.
Yeah.
So I guess you can't have it both ways.
Yeah, I guess not. We got a lot to get into on the program today. Corey Curtis will be with us at 8 o'clock for his weekly visit. We'll get into all things Tennessee Titans with him. Our very own Nick Fraser will be coming by at 8:30. We'll get into Nashville SC with him, who wins again over the weekend, and they're unbeaten in 14 straight. So Nashville SC playing very, very well. We will get into that with Nick Fraser a little bit later in the program. Take your thoughts in the meantime, 615-737-1025. Joe, we are two-ish weeks away from training camp. I believe training camp officially opens 2 weeks from tomorrow. The 22nd is when they're coming in. I think they're on the field the first day, the 23rd. This is what AI told me.
Which is so, kind of early.
Yeah, I agree.
Which is good.
Hey, let's get it going a little quicker. That's fine.
Yeah.
So now that we're just a couple weeks out away from training camp, What are your most pressing questions on the Tennessee Titans? And for the sake of this discussion for you, for our listeners, I am eliminating, hey, how good's Cam Ward going to be? I'm eliminating that from this this point of the discussion, because obviously when you talk about discussions with this football team right now, that's basically where it starts and ends, is with Cam Ward and how good he's going to be. So that's a given. We know that. Beyond that, what are your biggest questions, your most pressing Titans questions, things you're interested to see as camp opens here in a couple weeks?
And just to be clear, camp things.
Correct.
Right? Yeah. Well, look, we've already talked last week about Snead, L'Jarius Snead. So I do think that's one of the obvious big questions from a lot of different angles, his participation, the situation with the civil suit and potential criminal charges, you know, his health, all that stuff. L'Jarius Snead is an obvious one. You know, I think in camp you can be fooled, but, you know, the edge players against the offensive tackles, you know, is just one of my big questions. You know, we can think something can look one way or the other in camp, and then you start the real football and it can be different. But we got some pretty decent indicators in recent camps of concerns, especially at left tackle, that, you know, it's, you know, again, at the time it's like, ooh, Arden Key, but, you know, maybe that was a little, it was more about the guy trying to block him. So I think that it's probably, like, usually, like, there's some wins and losses and just offense and defense in general that goes back and forth. But I think you're still going to have some idea. You can also have some joint practices. You can obviously, we'll see with preseason games how much Brian Callahan thinks it's important to have those guys out there playing real football.
Yep.
I think some will probably see that. So, I mean, I just think that's because, one, you know, this team, the most obvious weakness is edge rusher, I think, and the most obvious needed improvement and potential improvement is offensive line play and pass protection. So I think both sides of that. And then to me, I think, you know, just receiver, the receiver room is also going to be something we talk about a ton. You know, if Bryce Oliver is indeed a lock with special teams as the reason, you know, that means somebody that has been talked about a lot is not going to be on this team. Could be Xavier Restrepo, could be one of these veteran other guys that they have. I mean, that's going to be – and then, of course, as much as we assume, like, the fourth-rounders are going to be on the team, they will be, right, barring something dramatic. But, like, do they actually look like they're going to help? Do they look like difference-makers at all? Those are the things that come to mind for me first.
Yeah, offensively, as far as training camp is concerned, that's probably where I start, you know, beyond Cam Ward would be – does anybody out there outside of Ridley and hopefully Lockett make plays on a consistent enough basis where you're like, okay, well, it looks like they may be able to help you out there. Now, you know, Lockett's going to be inside. You know, PK's talked about that, of they kind of view him as a slot guy right now, which he's not really been that in his career. They've moved him around in Seattle, but he's played a lot on the outside. So I'm interested to see what that looks like inside on what I would assume would be more of a full-time basis. But do we get a week into camp, a couple weeks into camp, and you're feeling pretty good about an IO Manner making plays out there? Or does DK go down the field a few times and make some big plays? Or is it just kind of totally absent of that throughout the first couple of weeks of camp and you're looking around and you're saying, well, I guess it's Calvin Ridley, sometimes Tyler Lockett, and then a bunch of dudes out there? Because – not that you have to have that entirely figured out by the time training camp's over and week one rolls around, but it would be nice to head into week one against Denver and be thinking to yourself that you've got some receivers out there beyond Ridley and Lockett that give you a chance. And again, Lockett, what is Lockett going to be at this stage of his career? I think we know. Like, last year he had 49 catches for 600 yards. I've said it multiple times. If he gives you that again this year, I would sign up for that right now if I'm the Tennessee Titans. I don't know that he's going to give you that. He'll be 33 in September, so we'll see what that looks like. But is there anybody, as camp goes on, that really separates themselves as that third guy at receiver that can come in and make plays for you?
Yeah. You want, I mean, you just want some buzz around someone. Again, sometimes buzz in camp doesn't mean much. Treylon Burks, prime example. But, you know, you want one of these guys to consistently, you know, make plays in camp, whatever the setting is. You know, look, it's easy in the one-on-ones. The receiver has a huge advantage.
Correct. But
again, like Kyle Phillips is another guy. Like, one-on-ones, dude's was an all-pro in the NFL, like, because he did have quick feet, and there was a reason he was on this team. But you have to be able to, you know, take the beating in a game and not drop punts in a game, et cetera, et cetera. So, but 7-on-7, team stuff, I mean, you know, you want to hear about some of these guys. Wow, once again, Ian Manor makes another big play downfield, you know, things like that. I also think, obviously, the situation just specifically at center is a big deal here.
Yep. Who's playing?
And how are they addressing that? Inside linebacker is interesting, too, for this team. You know, who's emerging there? Is James Williams a legit, like, guy who can play on defense this year? Is Cedric Gray going to matter? And things like that. So, there's a lot.
There is a lot with this team. We'll take your thoughts on it. 615-737-1025. Our phone number, 615-737-1025. We're a couple weeks out from Titans training camp. Beyond Cam Ward, what are your most pressing questions on the Titans heading into camp? We'll get into that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Taking your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025. Our phone number, 615-737-1025. Couple weeks out from camp, your biggest camp questions for the Titans beyond the obvious of Cam Ward. I got a lot of different thoughts on that front. Thoughts on the YouTube chat saying you can't expect rookie wide receivers not drafted in the first round to be productive if they're good, but the odds are that they won't be. Got another person on YouTube says, I just want no injuries in camp. Give me an injury-free training camp out there. You know, I hear what you're saying on the rookie wide receiver part of this. Like, at the end of the day, you have to remember that Io Manor and DK specifically are fourth-round guys. So, it's not like they've drafted Ja'Marr Chase here, and you're expecting that type of production immediately. But frankly, Joe, with where they're at with their roster, they really need one of those guys, at least, to be ready to play and contribute immediately. And maybe that is, at the end of the day, going to be asking too much from one of those two guys. You know, the point is well taken that, you know, rookie wide receivers, sometimes it's a crapshoot. Sometimes guys are ready to go and they're ready to be productive immediately. Sometimes they're not and it takes them a while. Sometimes, you know, when you're drafting somebody in the fourth round, they never get there. I mean, think of Des Fitzpatrick, who was drafted in the fourth round by the Tennessee Titans. So I understand if you're a Titans fan out there and you're looking at your receiving core right now and you're saying, man, they're relying way too much on one of these fourth rounders to come in or be good. Or maybe even beyond that, forget the fourth rounder. They're relying too much, in some people's opinion, on the undrafted free agent to come in and to be a part of the receiving core here. But they really need one of those guys, and I don't really care who it is. They need one of those guys to step in and be productive. And if I had to pick one of who I think has the best chance, I think Io Manor's probably the guy based on his physical profile.
Yeah, I would agree. I will point out, too, I mean, look, I don't disagree. I mean, we're not talking about high impact as a hope. You're just talking about, you know, did you find people who can play in this league and help out some? You're going to need high impact from Ridley. You're going to need something for the tight end position, too, by the way. But I will just point out that round four has included names such as Jerry Rice, Chris Carter, Steve Largent. Amon-Ra St. Brown, was he a fourth or fifth rounder?
He's fourth. Yeah,
he was a fourth rounder, too. Later than that, Cooper Kupp, Stephon Diggs, Terry McLaurin, Chris Godwin. Thank you, AI, on whatever this AI thing is on Google.
Nice.
Very handy. Yeah, that's not predicting that anything like that for these guys, but you can find.
I think D-Base was a fourth rounder, too, wasn't he?
He was.
Yeah.
That's right. Or was he fifth?
He's fourth.
Fourth or fifth?
Yeah, he's fourth.
There you go. So, you know, and obviously in second, third rounds, there's a lot of examples, too, of receivers. And look, today, we've discussed this a lot, but in today's game, receivers come out of college football less facing a huge learning curve in the NFL than they did previously, in previous eras where there was such a big difference. You know, there's a lot of concepts that do translate now for receivers. So, you know, I think that you should, in the fourth round, it's not unreasonable to think that you're going to get somebody who helps you.
Here's one thing that's, I think, a little underrated heading into camp that I'm really interested to see if it ends up being a big strength for the Titans this year. You know, we've talked a lot about corner, and obviously Legarius Sneed is going to be really important there. I'm looking at safety, and I'm looking at Hooker, Xavier Woods coming in, and you just spent a significant pick on Kevin Winston Jr. Now, we'll see exactly how healthy Kevin Winston Jr. is. But if he can come in and he can be an impactful player for you immediately, albeit in a role that, I mean, I guess he's not going to be starting. You've got Hooker and you've got Woods back there. But depending on which package you want to throw out there, how impactful can a guy like Winston be quickly? If he's a good player and he's what some people think he can be when he's healthy, then safety has a chance to go from what I thought at times last year was a pretty big weakness for that team to maybe a potential strength of the defense. Maybe, you know, maybe in some ways the strength of the defense when you really look at it.
That would help a lot. But I would also say that what you want the strength of the defense to obviously be is what, again, I thought would be more of a big deal last year and still I think could be a big deal, which is Simmons and Sweat inside. I mean, and that's one of those things that, you know, other than like Tavondre Sweat's physical condition, which is always going to be a talking point, even though, of course, he'll never discuss his weight and things like that. But, like, other than things like that, you're just not going to – again, you're not going to – that's a real – when real football starts kind of thing to assess. But
– well, and honestly, in camp, I'm not totally the same, but I'm almost the same way on the offensive line. Like, the offensive line, they're going to have days where they've got pads on. They're going to have days where they got the shells on. And you can – you can glean some things from that. But I think the bottom line, we're going to begin to really find out about the offensive line when week one rolls around in Denver, right? And maybe that's an unfair test because that's statistically the best defense in the NFL last year. But, I mean, you're gonna find out, like, get a pretty good litmus test of where they're at quickly. I think with the offensive line specifically, and maybe even with the edge rusher group, it's going to be really difficult to know where they're at in training camp just based on the lack of physicality that's in there. I'm not saying you can't take anything away from it because I do think, you know, those fully padded days and even, you know, the one-on-one stuff and shells and all that, like you can take some things from that as it relates to the offensive line and the defensive line, but those are really the positions as well where it's just hard to get a great read on that in camp.
Yeah, the big boy aspects of football, you know, just there's limitations on that. And, you know, in this league, it does seem like across the league, I feel like most fan bases are complaining about offensive line play, especially like in the first month of the season. They do so little actual football, which I understand. I mean, I wouldn't do it differently either. I'm sure there's a lot of offensive line coaches like, God, can we have 1 week of actual football? You know, that used by, back in the day, we used to actually play. Yeah, well, that is a really interesting question for this group. You know, when you talk about, I mean, again, the schedule is front loaded. There's a more opportunity at the end of the schedule. What's the state of your team and your season by the time you get there? It seems so important to do everything you can for the rookie QB right away, be as good as you can be right away. And as much as, like, I think it can be overrated, I mean, obviously, I think the whole preseason playing thing can be overrated. That, you know, those five guys up there is a lot of timing and chemistry and things like that that you probably can't work on all of it effectively until you're just dealing with a defense, even if it's a defense that's not game planned against you, it's a defense that's doing different things that you have to adjust to on the fly after the snap.
Adam in Portland on the text line says, our linebackers are cheeks. If I was a defense, why would I not – I guess he means offense. If I was an offense, why would I not run it outside every play? This is the biggest thing to me. We aren't setting edges, and I think we're going to give up a lot on the ground. This is from Adam in Portland.
Well, they definitely have addressed the not setting the edge thing. Like, yeah, have they addressed edge to the point of having enough pass rush? I have my questions about that. But I think for sure that they've added size physicality there to at least try to address that, because I agree. I mean, last year, there's so many bad things about this team. You can just, you know, it's hard to pick just one.
Nobody runs the ball in tights.
Yeah, that's right. And that was the thing that's like, boy, has that just gone away, where now they were just getting way too often just picked apart on the ground.
I mean, that Washington game last year, I don't remember how many yards specifically that they ended up rushing for in that game. I'm going to go find it right now. But I just remember thinking, good gracious, like, when's the last time we saw a Titans team just get absolutely obliterated in the run game the way that this one is right now?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's – I mean, I think of the Packers game too. I know, obviously, you know –
quarterback's part of that one.
Quarterback run game with Malik Willis was a big part of that, but also you knew that was coming. Now, that's a
– Yeah, Washington ran for 267 yards on the Titans.
I mean, that's just embarrassing.
Three touchdowns.
Like, that's embarrassing if you're a prominent college football team, you know, to ever give up that much. An NFL team giving up that much on the ground, I'd love to know – if there's ever been an NFL team that gave up that much in one game on the ground and made the playoffs.
Yeah, that's a good question.
I mean, there may well be, but I bet you there aren't many. That one stat in one game, I bet you if you had that number across the board, you would be talking absolute cheeks teams almost every time.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about 5.9 a carry for Washington in that game, 45 carries for 267 yards. I mean, that sounds like, you know, Alabama playing against Mercer.
They gave up
like
94 yards to Chris Rodriguez.
Yeah. 13 carries, 94 yards to Chris Rodriguez.
Kept him under 100.
7.2 a carry average for C-Rod there.
I mean,
no C-note for you, C-Rod.
Nice. I mean, Jeremy McNichols had 32 in that game. 6 carries for 32 yards.
My goodness.
So let's try not to do that again.
I always like McNichols.
Yeah. I like it too when I could say his name properly, which did not do one time on the show, which people still remind me of. Said McNipples, not McNichols.
Oh, my God, I forgot about that.
Like, well,
do we have that drop? How come we don't have any of your drops?
I make mistakes all the time.
I have to search for
that
one.
We could pair that.
I don't know. That was really early in the show.
But we could pair that with all my nipple talk. You know what I mean?
We could
have a little collage.
We could. One texter says, do you think Callahan should keep the starting offensive line on the field as much as possible in the preseason just to get them used to each other? Like, we talked about that a little. I understand that thought. I really do. Here's what I'd really like to see from the offensive line, and whether it comes in the form of preseason games or not, be out there for mostly every practice and be healthy together. Like, you know, I understand that Zeitler wasn't out there on the field for most of the offseason part of that. That's fine. Like, I understand Kevin Zeitler, if you're Brian Callahan, you're looking at it and you're like, I don't know that guy really needs to be out there in OTAs and minicamp, all right? Training camp, I'd like to see all those guys out there. And again, you hit on something earlier that's still probably not getting talked about enough. What about center? Like, how healthy is Cushenberry going to be? Is he going to be ready to go in any point in training camp? If he's not ready to go in training camp, who's playing center? What's that going to look like? Like, all of those things together, what I'd really like to see is those guys be healthy. Because part of, not all of, but part of the story last year, you know, NPF was coming back from injury, and he wasn't ready to go early in training camp. And I'm not saying if he was ready to go from the jump in training camp that he would have been a whole lot better, because, frankly, he just sucks. But I need the offensive line to be healthy, available, and out there in training camp, regardless if they're playing, you know, 4 series, 6 series, whatever it is in preseason games. Get out there on the field and practice together every day and be ready to go by week one.
Yeah, that would help. You don't want Zeitler to be like the offense's version of Snead. Or it's like,
exactly.
Yeah, we'll just see you during the season. I don't think that's a good idea.
I don't think so either. 615-737-1025, our phone number. More of your questions to get to on the Titans front. We will do that coming up next. Plus, when the move was made originally, it was something that Titans fans, I think, were really excited about. And I wonder if that's still the case heading into this year. We'll get into that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 the game. This week's Nashville's best deal is Mellow Mushroom. There's no pizza like Mellow Mushroom Pizza. Stone-baked with fresh ingredients. Next level imagination. and limitless options for customization. It's a higher order of pizza. You know you love Mellow Mushroom. Now get half off a $30 gift card while supplies last at thegamenashville.com/deals. Gift card is good for downtown Broadway and on and in Franklin locations as well. So check that out, Mellow Mushroom, Nashville. Best deal of the week here on 102.5 The Game. Taking your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025, our phone number. Jared from Spring Hill throwing it out there says, nobody on this team has earned the right not to play in the preseason. Would be good for the culture to see it and for Brian Callahan's point system as well. I question Callahan the most in all of this. You know, Joe, every year we get into the preseason conversation. It happens all the time. And look, I understand it to some degree, especially if you watched how bad they've been the last few years. And it's like, well, maybe they do need all the help they can get. They need all the time together that they can get. I am interested on the Cam Ward front to see how they handle that. Like, do they feel like Cam Ward, from a rep standpoint, needs significant work in a preseason game? We have seen over the last couple of years teams handle that a little bit differently. I think Jaden Daniels had like three series in the preseason last year, so he didn't get a whole lot. Some other teams have handled that differently, yeah, and they've played their quarterbacks a little bit more the last couple of years. As a team, I'm interested to see how Callahan handles that this year. But, you know, the one thing I say every year on this, I think everybody loves the idea of their players playing more in the preseason until one of them gets hurt. And then you look around and you say, well, what are you doing? Why are you playing them this much in a meaningless game? And hopefully that doesn't happen, but that's always something I'm scared to death of if I'm a coach.
Yeah. Like Jared saying, nobody in this team has earned the right not to play in the preseason. That's what it's about, though, right? It's not about, well, you're good. You know, it's just, look, if I will say, if Vrabel were coaching this team still, I can tell you right now, Cam Ward might have like one series of handing off, and like that just, Vrabel was purely,
get him out of
there. I'm not getting dudes hurt in this crap.
Yeah.
But we'll see. I do feel like, especially last year, there were a few teams that surprised me a little bit with, I mean, even like Mahomes, right? He had a few series.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things. It is like, yes, obviously, especially with the QB, they can actually be tackled to the ground. It's real football, so you have that extra risk. But also, you know, you're gonna have injuries all through camp too. And the joint practices that you do with another team, there's team periods. There's fights, right? And so stuff like that happens, and people still do it despite the risk. I mean, you have to be comfortable with some level of risk to try to get yourself prepared for the season. It just feels like in the league, for a few years there, it got to the point where almost everybody was, I don't think they were colluding, but it was just sort of this league-wide thing of like, yeah, we're not playing these guys anymore, which of course took so much value out of the NFL preseason. If you're my age, you remember watching NFL preseason games and seeing the whole team play in the first half, like a lot of them. And you're like, this is awesome. Yeah. I mean, this is actually a game I want to watch. I barely watch them anymore.
Well, even early days of the Titans, right? Like you would go to the preseason game and a lot of people, that's where they would go. They would go to the preseason game because they either couldn't afford to go in the regular season, but they knew that you were going to see the guys play. Like I remember I went to a few preseason games where like McNair played all the way through the first series of the second half. And that doesn't really ever happen anymore. I'm sure, you know, there will be a couple teams that do that this year, but that just doesn't happen very often anymore. You asked about the rushing yard stat. Trevor on the text line says, you asked if a team gave up 250-plus rushing yards on a defense and still made the playoffs. It did happen. And last year at that, in week four, the almighty Buffalo Bills gave up a staggering 271 yards on the ground. Wow. I don't know what game that was. I think it was Baltimore, if memory serves me correctly.
Well, that would make sense. That'd be the one team that could get a team like that, right?
I'm going to go double check and make sure that that's the case. But
I seem
to remember Baltimore just running all over Buffalo at one point last year.
Yeah, that's a heck of a find. I still would. That's one of those things. Like if you could do a search on that, and you probably can with some service, I bet you'd be. It would not be a ton.
It was Baltimore. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's almost like Baltimore would be the one team. I almost put an asterisk next to it. You know what I mean? Just because between Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry last year.
Yeah, Derrick Henry had 24 carries for 199. And I think that Lamar had 54.
My God, the Buffalo Bills hate trying to tackle Derrick Henry.
I also think that
forever
was
ever and ever, amen.
I think Derrick broke a massive one in
87.
That game. 87. Yeah. So, yeah. There you go. 34 carries, 271 yards for the Ravens last year.
There you go. By the way, real quick on the point of the preseason games, I remember being in the Pontiac Silverdome, 1989. It was like, and Rodney Pete was, he must have been because he was a rookie and he wasn't going to start, but Rodney Pete quarterbacked the second half, and it was like they were coming back against Cleveland. It was like the whole, Barry Sanders hadn't signed yet. He was in the press box watching. He was a rookie, but it was like this huge deal. Like, oh, man, line. Like it mattered that they even won the game, or at least it felt like it as a fan,
yeah.
You know? And key guys were on the field still late in the game. It's so different than it is
Boy, now. How different it is now.
Again, we're getting to the point where it's like, I mean, they're still going to have them, but once they go to 18, which is inevitable, then I think you just you
two.
Keep yeah, you go with two. You have one home, one road,
which I'm fine with.
And suck
way.
It up. Yeah. Like it still will be too much.
If you go to if you go to 18, give me the two preseason games. That's fine. So Joe, I remember, you know, Brian Callahan was hired last year, and yes, there was excitement about him. Obviously, you're talking about the head coach there and him coming in and working with Will Levis and the offense and all that. But when he announced that Denard Wilson was going to be his defensive coordinator, I remember having conversations about it on the show. I remember having Titans fans call in and talk about it in terms of the aggressiveness of Denard Wilson, the different ways that he can scheme up, whether it's blitzes, fronts, whatever it is, to get pressure on the quarterback. And there was a lot of excitement about Denard Wilson. Denard Wilson was highly thought of around the league. He was a guy that had a lot of success. You looked at his coaching background and some of the places that he had been and some of the people that he had worked with, and you thought, man, like this guy could end up being a star. Now, you look at year one with the Titans, and we've talked about the coaching staff. You got a rookie head coach, a rookie defensive coordinator, and a rookie offensive coordinator all in their first year of doing those respective jobs. And it did not go well for the Titans. If you look statistically at the Titans' defense last year, and I'm sure we'll get reminded of this at some point, like they didn't give up a whole lot of yards. Like they were, what were they, second in the league in yards surrendered last year? So if you want to go by like the traditional defensive stats that way, pretty good year for the defense last year. If you want to go by the eye test and points allowed, which, again, as we've talked about before, is really what matters with a defense. How many points are you giving up? It was not a great year for the Titans defense last year. So my question is, if you're a Titans fan, how are you feeling about, number one, Denard Wilson and his ability to do the job heading into year two as defensive coordinator? And number two, the tools at his disposal to help him do the job on the defensive side of the ball in year two?
That's a good question. Right now, the early going, this is an example. Maybe it'll end up being an example of, yes, everybody wants to be a coordinator and take that to be a head coach, but all coordinator jobs are not good. And I'm not trying to take blame off Denard Wilson, but I don't know how good he is because he just had a terrible team last year. Yes, it's probably overrated going into last year. Part of the overly optimistic vibe around the team was definitely his press conferences. I mean, he's awesome in those. And I absolutely think that he has like the personality to be a head coach in the NFL. And he may well get there. But he also, this may set him back, you know, coming to Nashville and taking this job, you know. But not, you know, but if he can get this defense to passable this year, because, yeah, those stats are, as we all know, those stats are so much about the turnovers and the special teams that put that defense in short fields more than other defenses. I mean, they were a bad – here and there, they had some good performances. And I think you could argue that here and there they overachieved based on their talent level, but then plenty of other times they didn't. They achieved at or below their awful talent level. Big year for him to, you know, just get this defense to, you know, like passable, average, okay, decent. And I think if he does that, he will have helped himself a lot, and people will look at him differently. I just, you know, anybody who looks at last year and says, "Oh, that was a bad hire," I'm definitely gonna pause on that one and be in wait and see mode. I mean, what he did coming into this place with the Eagles and Ravens, you go back to this guy was a, you know, quality QC guy for years under Jeff Fisher, who obviously is a very good defensive coach. He has the resume and I think the preparation to be in this job. It's just bad first year.
615-737-1025, our phone number. What's your confidence level in Denard Wilson going into year two as Titans defensive coordinator? And there's a couple things on that front I want to hit on coming up next as well. We'll do that. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game. Taking your thoughts on the Titans at 615-737-1025. Your confidence level in Denard Wilson as defensive coordinator as he's heading in to year two. One thing that's interesting on that to me, Joe, is we talked when he was hired about like the different ways to get after the quarterback and how that may be coming from different areas, be that blitzing, be that different packages, different looks, all these things. I'm looking at the sack total last year from the Titans. Number one, it's a depressing thing to look at. It's not very many there. There are 11 total Titans a year ago that registered at least half a sack. So Jack Gibbons had half a sack last year.
Congrats.
So he's the 11th and final Titan that registered a sack last year. I'm looking at, like, Roger McCreary had one. Jerome Baker had one. Ollie Gay had one. James Lynch, as a defensive lineman, had one. Tavondre Sweat had one. A lot of people with one. And I'm wondering, this year, based on where they're at with their roster, can they find more ways to generate pressure on the quarterback from different spots? Like, can you find a way to blitz Roger McCreary more effectively this year? Can you find a way to generate pressure from different spots more often this year? Because frankly, Joe, it's not a great way to operate as a defensive coordinator. You'd rather just be able to line up and rush forward and get after the quarterback that way. I don't know if that's within the scope of realism for this Titans defense this year. And if they can't do that, you're going to have to find some way somehow to generate pressure on the quarterback. So I guess, you know, that's number one. It's a really hard job for Denard Wilson to be able to pull that off this year, but I am wondering, can they be more effective getting after the quarterback in different ways this year than they were a year ago?
Yeah, that's a job of the DC, right, to scheme up pressure. And like you said, the best DCs are often the ones who don't have to.
Yeah.
So, you know, the luxury of four-man rush getting home enough for you and affecting the quarterback, it's amazing how much smarter defensive coordinators who have that will look. But yeah, I think he's gonna have to figure out ways and be creative and come from different places. And yeah, you know, like, that was part of the conversation around him coming in. Like, again, regardless of necessity, just that this is an aggressive style and things like that. So yeah, it's hard to imagine that they're gonna be able to do enough without some of that.
And Kenneth Murray had 3.5 sacks last year. He's gone. But that spot, could you get more? Can you get similar production or more production out of that spot getting after the quarterback?
Yeah. Yeah, like if a guy like James Williams, again, I might be a little optimistic to think that he's going to be out there a lot on defense. I don't know. But he does seem like athletically a guy who, if he is and can do everything reasonably well, is a guy who might be able to give you some of that.
I mean, I'll be honest with you. It feels like there's a real limitation on Denard Wilson heading into this year. It does. Like, unless there are one or two guys that emerge getting after the passer that on paper just doesn't look like it's likely right now, it looks like he's going to be in a really tough spot in year two as DC. And I know that if Snead is healthy and available, you're feeling pretty good about the secondary. Like, I went over the safeties earlier. I can see where the Titans get pretty good safety play this year. Hopefully they do. We'll see if that materializes. If Snead is healthy, then they may be pretty good in the secondary. So obviously that helps. But I still look at the ability to get after the passer. And unless basically Femi Oladejo comes in and is just way better as a rookie than I think most people expect him to be, I don't know what the path is there for this team having a good defense. Like, it's, you have to be able to affect the quarterback in today's NFL. And I know people are going to say Simmons and Sweat, and that's fine. Hopefully Simmons and Sweat are better at getting after the quarterback and finishing the deal on the quarterback this year. But you're talking about guys last year that combined for 6 sacks. Simmons had 5, Sweat had 1. And how much does the position that they play lend itself towards actually sacking the quarterback? Like, it's just, you know, sacks aren't everything. We've talked about that. They are something. Like, you need to be able to finish the deal on the quarterback. And beyond that, how often are you actually affecting the quarterback? And I still look at this defense and wonder where exactly that's coming from.
Yeah. But if you stop the run, like you said, if you have Snead and you're better in the back end, and even if those guys don't have big sack numbers, I do think that – and then if they are problematic or demand – both of them playing to the point where you have to make a tough choice and you'd rather double – you feel like you need to double both of them, well, that's how your edge players look better than they are. And that's what they're going to have to do. They're going to have to find ways to make the edge players look better than they are. Ideally, with stuff like that, those things working out for the defense, then having to blitz all the time. And then Oladejo, yeah, look, you could make the case for him – after Cam Ward is the most important rookie because he's in such an empty spot for this team and they so badly need help. Arden Keel makes some plays. He's okay. He's not a bad guy to have in your rotation, but right now he's the lead guy, and that's just not good. I mean, it's like that position for the Titans relative to the NFL. Again, unless Oladejo is one of the surprises in the league this year, that position for the Titans is kind of like center is for the Preds relative to the rest of that league.
It's funny you bring that up because I was thinking about this the other day. Like, I don't think you have to go that far down the list with the Titans when you're asking about most important players this year in terms of just purely 2025 and how their season's going to play out. I don't think you have to go down that far before you get to Femi Oladejo based on the position that he plays and just how much of a glaring hole that is in their roster right now. You know, I was thinking about it from a Preds perspective. I don't think you have to go that far down the list with the Predators this year before you get to Svechkov and think about how important that guy is. Like, if he's really good, well, that changes what they are down the middle. If he's not, then it's hard to see them being very good this year. Oladejo, it's funny because, I mean, he's a second-round pick, and not a low second. He's a pretty high second-round pick for the Titans. And I think a lot of people are looking at him and saying, well, we just don't expect all that much out of him, out of the rookie year. And I understand why, and I'm kind of the same way. Like, he just started playing this position, and it feels like more of kind of like a project pick and a developmental pick than it does an instant impact pick, which is not typically what we're talking about with a second-round pick. So maybe he's able to figure it out really quickly. Just the vibe I get from Titans fans in the aftermath of that pick is there's not a whole lot of expectation for him to come in and be like a 9-sack guy immediately, which for a typical second-round pick at that spot is probably what we'd be talking about, Joe, of how good can this guy be immediately?
Yeah, and look, if it turns out that there's so much more for him and he's just scratching the surface and in years to come he really becomes a difference maker after like a rough rookie year, then you know this team is in the position where that pick makes sense if that's the case.
Yeah,
but I also think like whatever he's got, he's gonna have opportunity to show it this year. He has to, and that would be one of the pleasant surprises. For one thing, again, like we're you can't make final judgments on a draft class in the first year, but he's one of those guys that's going to give you a glimpse of this new GM too, or this new personnel structure, because it was a little bit unconventional, and you could have gone with people who are more proven in college football.
This team, there's been more than two, but there have been two glaring examples in the history of the Titans franchise about players that really didn't do a whole lot in their first stop, and then they came here and were just unbelievable. You think about Delanie Walker on offense, right? Like, he was in San Francisco, and he was Vernon Davis's backup there. And he really didn't do a whole lot in San Francisco. And then he came here, and he was by far their best offensive weapon for a significant period of time. On defense, like Kyle Vandenbosch in Arizona, didn't do hardly anything. Like, he played 4 years in Arizona. One of them missed an entire season with a torn ACL. He had four total sacks in 4 years.
That's wild.
In Arizona. And his first year with the Titans, he had 12 and a half sacks. He came here and the light bulb just immediately clicked.
Yeah.
I don't know who it would be. You know, obviously they went out and they brought in Draymond Jones from the Seahawks. I don't know if it's him, if it's somebody, if it's a draft pick from last year that just all of a sudden blossoms. Maybe it is all the day job. They need somebody to come out of nowhere in a desperate way and be maybe not a 12 and a half sack guy, but they need somebody to really have a level of production that they've just not had to this point in their career. And I don't know if that's realistic or not, but they need one of those guys right now.
Yeah. Oladejo to be the Javon Kearse as a rookie. Yeah. You know, how about that? No one had him coming in here and setting the world on fire.
I think he'd take that.
Yeah.
Hey. He's got some physical tools to him.
Yeah, I mean,
that's why he went in the second round.
Yeah. He does, and obviously he's got a presence on the field that people took note of in the spring, so he's going to be, you know, really important. They've tried to address that with young guys, you know, late in the draft and UDFAs and things like that, and none of those guys have really panned out, and you're kind of left with, you know, just a ton of opportunity for them.
615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Titans, plus an interesting conversation that Ian Safar brought up the other day that we're going to get into coming up next as it relates to the NFL and the fifth-year option. That's coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.